RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 60 with guest Alan Hurt, recorded Thursday, May 8th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? Richard, you are, when this is going live, I think you're in Orlando, aren't you?
I am in Orlando, and you are not. I'll be there for Dev Week, and that's when this show is going to be on the air. So through the magic of time shifting, we're still doing the show as per normal.
That's right. And next week, if you're listening to this on the day it's released, I'll be joining you in Orlando for the IT Week.
Absolutely. And we're going to be on the TechEd online stage pretty much nonstop between Speaker Idle and all the panel discussions we're doing.
Right. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And we're going to have a little space in the back of the stage to be able to record our own podcasts as well. So I'm hoping we'll grab a few interesting folks to have some interviews with and make even more shows.
Yep, but I know that there's a number of listeners, don't know how many, but I certainly know of several that are going to be at TechEd this year, and we sure hope that you will stop on by, at least say hi and sit down, and you know, be good to have a conversation.
And if you can't be at TechEd, send us an email, info@runasradio.com. Let us know what you think and what we can do better.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Alan Hurt has been using SQL Server in various guises since 1992. That was back in its feather boa phase, I believe.
Quite a while back, yeah.
For the past 10 years, he has been consulting, training, developing content, speaking at events, including a recent series on both SQL Server high availability and consolidation for Microsoft, and authoring books, white papers, and articles. His most recent publication include the book Pro SQL Server 2005 High Availability from A-Press and various articles in SQL Server Magazine. Before striking out on his own in 2007, he most recently worked for both Microsoft and Avanade and still continues his work closely with Microsoft on various projects. He can be reached via his website at www.sqlha.com or alan@sqlha.com. Hi, Alan.
How's it going?
Real good. We chatted on .NET Rocks sometime last year, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we did.
And that was all high availability stuff, which is not normally something you think about in the context of development. I thought it was a really cool show. But that's not what we're talking about today. I hear you are like the advocate for virtualization of SQL Server.
Oh, yeah. Just throw everything into virtual and be done with it.
SQL Server and virtualization, that really just sounds pretty scary.
It's crazy talk, man.
It is crazy.
Well, to some degree, it is, and in many ways, it isn't. It fortunately or unfortunately, is something that the SQL Server space is going to have to really start to deal with and come to grips with the next year to two.
So you think something's coming in next year or two that's really going to make it more feasible or actually a good idea?
I think it's just the nature of how businesses are being run that it's going to force the issue. I don't think the technology itself isn't going to change that much in the next 2 years. I certainly think with the introduction of Microsoft's Hyper-V,
right,
with Windows Server 2008, it may change the game a little bit in terms of, say, some supportability issues. But in general, where this is all coming from is largely coming from IT orgs. It's not really coming from the DBAs.
Sure.
DBAs are now being kind of forced to do somebody else's evil bidding and getting this done.
Well, I mean, virtualization isn't just a fad, right? I mean, it's taken the market by storm because it's a pretty good idea. It makes it a lot easier to upgrade. It makes it a lot easier to back up. There's all kinds of strength to it, but SQL Server?
Well, there's some things in SQL Server. Don't you compete with yourself? I mean, like I/O, I think about disk-related things. And even if with Hyper-V and the multiprocessor and multi-threading and all that, isn't I/O still an issue?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go back on a little bit of history. So in the Windows space, virtualization is relatively new. I mean, VMware as a product has been around since about 2001, and I've worked with it in, you know, ESX. It wasn't called ESX, and I forget what it was called. But Workstation was around, and you also had Kinectix with, like, Virtual PC before Microsoft bought them, and then when Microsoft bought them, you had Virtual PC and Virtual Server. So it's not new in the Windows space, but it's fairly new in terms of its shall we say, prominence in the corporate space as a real method of getting business done. I'd say I've seen a shift in the past 2 to 3 years. Now, where it's really getting a lot of play is that people have done their application servers, so the next logical progression is, why can't we do our database servers?
Right.
Because think about it. At this point, the SQL Server world and databases and instances and whatever else you have, no matter what database platform, people are starting to look at the database layer as a utility. You know? And where some of that, I think, it all started was that switch from direct attached storage, or DAS, to SAN, where your disk infrastructure became a shared resource. So where we went from the world of dedicated disks for every server, whether it was Exchange or SQL or Oracle, to a world where everybody and their uncle is now sitting on the same shared disk.
Right.
You know, so this isn't anything new. This isn't anything that should be catching anyone by surprise. But now we're starting to hit the database arena, and the pressure is coming down from IT orgs because it's, you know, kind of the popular buzz thing at the moment, to virtualize SQL. So, yeah, you have a lot of the traditional bottlenecks, and it's kind of interesting to see the DBA struggling to come up with the reasons why they can't virtualize. Now, I've been doing a series of consolidation talks with Microsoft, and virtualization takes up a good chunk of time because it's a pretty open discussion, because out of, say, each event we've had roughly anywhere between 15 and 30 people, every single one of them is getting this pressure in their organization. And that's just a microcosm of what's really happening out there.
Right. So, I mean, right off the bat, you know, one of the key factors of this has been the SAN. Aren't the LUNs the problem when we try to virtualize?
So we've already got the issue where storage has been virtualized to the point of neutering performance. And DBAs are having to jump through hoops to prove that it's actually the SAN causing their problems and not anything else.
Right.
But that's a whole discussion topic in and of itself, so I'm trying to leave it at that. But then you have now the issue of virtualized software, or virtualized servers under some piece of software that enables that, where on a dedicated server, even if you're on a SAN that's highly virtualized in and of itself, you have more control over the I/O by dedicated HBAs or host bus adapters in the servers. Now you may have, let's say you have a ratio of 15 or 20 virtual servers to a single like ESX or Hyper-V type of scenario.
Right.
Now, underneath that, even if you're able to throttle or give direct access to disk at the disk level, which I know is enabled in Hyper-V, and things have gotten better in the latest version of ESX, the problem is that you're still sharing your host bus adapters with all those other servers.
Right.
So, again, what kind of performance are you going to do? It's, and the worst part is that most people don't know how to do load testing, so they can't even prove where the performance problem is. So you really need to test this stuff before things happen. Then you bubble that upper layer, say, okay, we may have a potential I/O conflict. Then you get into memory and CPU. Well, again, you are having to host the equivalent of a real server and all its requirements under a bigger umbrella. So you're going to need a very large server to handle what might have just been an old SQL 2000 box that is only 512 mega memory and whatever you got. Now you need a box bigger than that to just handle that load. Then you combine that with other stuff and the overhead of the virtualizing of that. So, and you're not necessarily getting the full processor bandwidth of performance. You're getting some amalgamation of that. So you can't predict performance as easy under a virtualized environment. Now, that's not to say it's all bad. Now, in my experience, where people are actually already doing it in the SQL world is in the dev and test world.
Sure.
People have been doing it, obviously, with, like, virtual server and virtual PC to give people their own images. But you're starting to see people not buying dedicated, say, dev and test boxes and putting them in virtual. So that's already happening, and it's happened at a lot of clients I know. But, you know, you're then starting to see it say, again, why can't we do it in production? And it's becoming a harder and harder argument for the DBAs to rally again.
I like how in the latest versions of the virtual server products, we're being able to actually assign a NIC to a specific VM. So we're no longer trying to share that resource. And I'm wondering if the HBAs ultimately will go the same way.
Well, they might. But again, even think of the, like a network card scenario. How many NICs are you putting in a box?
Well, I've seen a lot.
Yeah. Like
8 or 12.
Yeah, but the thing is, not every server you're going to buy is going to have 12 PCIX slots.
Right.
Right. You know, most people are trying to even do this more on the cheap, and let's have a farm of this stuff, and let's get blades, right?
Right.
So, because, think about it. The way we've gone with multiple cores, and you can have even some blades that have 16 and 32 gig of memory, what's the need to have a big iron server to do this stuff for some people? So, when you've only got two NICs or two or three HBAs, even if it goes that way, how many virtuals are you hosting? And at some point, that means if you're only getting a couple directly attached to HBAs, they probably should have been in on physical using multiple instances anyway.
Sure.
I'm just trying to think about ways we can... The problem is that I know that SQL Server, when you run it bare metal, gobbles the entire machine as quickly as it can as load goes up, just to give itself some headroom. When we virtualize it, I guess the only restrictions we can put on the machine really is you only get two processors and you only get 4 gigs of RAM, go to town. There's really no other way to limit the impact of a given SQL server. So once I get 4 or 5 of these or 6 of these running on one machine and they all get busy, it sounds like things are going to get very, very frantic. I've always focused on the problem of virtualization at the shared resource level. I figured the HBAs are what's going to kill us every time.
Well, it's a lot of things. And then you think about it this way. Sort of the point of consolidation and making things easier is to reduce your overhead of administration.
Right.
So forget the tangible cost that the business wants to see. Let's talk the IT side of the world for a second. When you take a physical OS and virtualize it, what are you saving yourself? You've still got to log into that thing. You've still got to patch it. You've got to maintain it.
Yep.
So you've really not reduced anything. To me, it's generally better in the SQL Server world to reduce your server count by going to less servers and more instances on those servers. You know, more often than not, that generally is the better way to go and is more cost effective.
And you simplify your management because you don't have multiple databases running in a given instance.
Well, but we're also going that route as well because, again, databases are getting to the point where it's utility. Because the problem that a lot of people have in deploying applications is their process. Because when you spin up an application, whenever IT gets involved, if somebody wants a new box, there's a PO process. You got to wait for the hardware to come in. You got to rack it. You got to configure it. And then and only then can you install SQL. And for a lot of companies, that can be a 2 to 6 month process.
Right.
Now, whereas you want to be able to just have an instance sitting somewhere and say, we can host you. We can put your database here. We can put you in tomorrow if you want. You know, and that's only really achieved, and you can only scale doing that right now using real hardware.
So, and of course, again, in the back in the test environment, the development environment, we do that sort of thing all the time, spin up a machine very quickly to do some related test or some piece of code, and then shut it back down again, hopefully.
That's one of the real strong spaces or strong points of virtualization really is in being agile when it comes to if you're doing software development or have to do lots of different test systems and change gears a lot. You really can see some real benefits that way.
Right, and that's what makes it so sexy to a lot of orgs because you have your traditional IT folks saying who aren't managing, let's say, the virtual environment. They're your DBAs or traditional Windows administrators going, you know, it'll take us X amount of time to do it. You're talking to the same, the people who want the app in your environment. Then you have the guys managing the virtual environment say, forget those guys, we'll get you up and running tomorrow, we'll right-click, and boom, you got a server.
Yep.
That's very sexy.
It is very effective.
So,
I can say, personally, I instituted and implemented, racks of blades specifically for doing that when you have a lot of different kinds of systems that you have to. It also allows you to maintain that library, right? So you have your VMs, the files that are created. The benefits of not having to recreate that or reinstall that every time are pretty huge.
So I 100% agree with that, and especially like where you have a dev and test environment where you need to recreate multiple scenarios, having a library of that stuff is great. The problem that you're also going to run into, and a lot of people don't think about disk cost, is licensing.
Right.
You know, depending on how you license your stuff, and I would recommend anyone talk to their either sales folks or qualified Microsoft licensing reps about this.
Is there such a thing?
There is. I've talked to a few of them, but they, you know, you really got to talk to the right people. Because, for example, there's a big difference between Enterprise Edition of SQL and Standard.
Right.
In terms of licensing. And I know this for a fact where we've gone through it in these consolidation events. That let's say you have a 4-proc box and you want to then, say, put Hyper-V on that. If you buy Enterprise Edition and license all 4-procs, you can put however many virtuals, however many instances of SQL you want, all that other good stuff.
Right.
So if you're doing Standard, on paper it may look cheaper, but then you're getting to the point where you're licensing per server, you know, and then per virtual. So you may have a more hairy licensing scheme going to virtualized and depending on what editions of the OS and SQL you're using. And that's a huge cost to the business where they might have thought they were saving themselves money by going virtualized and going to Standard Edition. They may have actually increased their IT budget for licensing.
Probably also worth pointing out and putting a little plug in for, you know, MSDN Universal or MSDN licensing for dev and test, that quite often that can be a cost-effective way to properly license people to be able to access systems with software on them that otherwise might really be exorbitant or completely cost-prohibitive for a business.
Oh, absolutely.
And I have also read that Microsoft now provides passive copy licensing so that if you have backup hardware that's not actually doing work, you don't have to pay extra for those licenses.
Right.
That's been in place for a while. It's been more, they gear it towards like the HA folks, like say you're doing log shipping or something like that, or mirroring where it's just purely a standby server. You know, essentially the way that works in the HA world in SQL is you've got 30 days. You know, let's say you bring that server live because of a disaster. You've got 30 days or a month or whatever it is before you have to actually license that thing.
Okay.
They figure in that time frame you need to, you'll go back to the primary at some point anyway.
Right. That makes sense.
But then you get into the issue there of, you know, people want to say, well, I just want to do reporting. So I'll just use my standby server. The second you press that into active service, you've got to pay for it.
Yeah, you're breaking the licensing rules at that point.
Yeah, people don't think through that. I always tell people kind of jokingly, like, okay, you want to do mirroring? Well, you know, and you want to throw a snapshot on it, great, go tell your boss that that reporting solution just cost you, you know, if you've got 2 procs and you're doing enterprise list price, that just cost you $50,000.
Right.
They probably won't like that answer.
Yeah, not so much.
Probably won't do it.
So where do you see SQL servers fall down when they're running in virtualization? What are they running out of?
Well, I/O is number one, so if you're going to put stuff in there, put it low I/O, you know. For example, another good use is you're trying to get rid of those old 6.5 and 7.0 boxes that you've got lying around. Because we all have those applications or work with customers that have those applications they can't get rid of.
Sure.
So you P2V, you physical to virtual, there's a bunch of software to do that. Make it a virtual, you can get rid of the physical. Fine. There was a customer actually in the delivery yesterday that I did in the Seattle area that said that by actually virtualizing their old SQL 7 box, they got better performance than they had on the old physical box.
Nice. On the new hardware. Yeah, I've experienced that as well.
Exactly. So that's a great use in that case. But, you know, if you're going to start looking at this stuff, you got to look at low I/O, very small utilization type of stuff. You know, I wouldn't be throwing my mission critical, highly available, needed to be highly available HA system, SAP in there. You know,
right.
So that's the other thing too that changes the game here is your high availability strategy, because your traditional methods, like where a lot of people may have considered traditional clustering, that goes away because if your two nodes are essentially under the virtual, what are you buying yourself? You know, all on the same server. Now, every like Hyper-V or you know, you look at ESX with vMotion, they've got their own HA stuff. But really, if it's all in the same box in the end, you're going to need to find some separation to give yourself high availability. So maybe you have two separate servers, and you're replicating ones at a disk level, which is, again, another expense, and that so you can just bring up the server on the other virtual by powering it on. So you have a direct copy of the disk level.
Right.
You know, but the thing that I get asked a lot of times, because I do a lot of high availability stuff, is, well, can I cluster under virtual? Technically, you can, but again, I don't see the point in it. It makes no sense to me.
Not when you can do a switchover in a few seconds.
Exactly. You know, whether it's using something like vMotion or you're doing it at the disk level and you just power the thing up, whatever.
Yeah, it changes up the game on what that means.
Yeah, you need to change up all your IT processes to get this done.
Right. How does iSCSI fit into this equation? Doesn't that make things better?
Well, it makes things cheaper. I wouldn't necessarily say better.
Okay. Like, I mean, in terms of sharing resources and things, no difference?
Well, remember that iSCSI has some network overhead.
Right.
So, again, where's your bottleneck going to come in? Right? You know, and then you have to get into performance of, do you want to put a tier one on iSCSI when you may know that pure fiber channel, you know, HBAs perform better?
Sure.
So, again, it boils down to cost in the end, to be honest with you.
More than anything else.
Yeah.
So let's say that you want to put together, you know, what's Alan's ultimate realistic real world sort of way to what hardware are you going to put together in order to bring up a few instances of SQL Server for business use, not just for test. What do you think of in terms of the actual resources required to do it well?
I mean, you're looking, you know, again, cores change it, but probably a 4 and 8 proc box, at least dual or quad cores. Minimum of probably 8 to 16 gig of memory, probably more like 16 or 32. Decent I/O bandwidth. I mean, none of this stuff is that expensive anymore. The hardware really has come down.
Right.
But you're still going to need a very robust box to do this stuff.
But I find it very interesting to think about what would I get more benefit from, running 4 separate virtualized instances of SQL Server or wanting a bare metal SQL Server with 4 instances of SQL Server in that?
Well, your challenge there, for example, is security, things like security. You get better isolation in virtualization.
Right.
You know, clear win for virtualization at, you know, things like, you know, can you manage, what's your patching team? Because, you know, as we all know, if you need to patch the entire OS, and you need to go through reboot, you're going to affect those 4 instances you just talked about.
Ah, very interesting point, where in virtualized, we'd boot each one of them separately.
Right, but then you're going to get into is it more of a pain to manage 100 of those things versus one OS with 4 instances?
Right, I only have to patch once instead of patching a bunch of times.
Exactly, so it's where's your pain and where are you going to feel it or not?
That's a great balancing act.
It's not as cut and dry as people would like to make it out to be, clearly. But, you know, your patching schemes and how you do your administration is all going to have to change. So you need to think of whether it's going to be more of a pain to go through physical or virtual and how you affect them and how you notify people. Because in the end, you know, if you can't manage these boxes, whether it's physical or virtual, it's not going to matter how you do it.
Right.
It's
going to be bad either way. So you need to really think about those scenarios before you embrace either one, or maybe you... Just through, as you start to think through this in your own environment, where is the best place for us to deploy virtualization and where are the scenarios which absolutely need to be on physical? Because I think in the next year or two, you're going to see a very big hybrid in an environment of this is where virtual will always be, this is where we will never use virtualization.
And high availability also changes in the virtual model. It's different.
Well, absolutely. As we talked about before, you know, where you might have just put a cluster in before.
Right.
Now you can't necessarily think that. But the problem then comes in, okay, I want to do mirroring or maybe I'll do log shipping. Well, that's at a per database level. So if you've got 50 databases, that's 50 jobs or, log shipping jobs and T-log backup jobs you need to really, really monitor. And you got to make sure mirroring is running. So you create administrative nightmares for yourself in other ways.
Right, sure. So what scenario do you think absolutely never virtualize, the bare metal no matter what kind of SQL situation?
Your bet the farm mission critical application.
So when it comes down to absolutely must be up 100% of the time, you still trust bare metal clustered solutions?
Not even just take clustering out of it, because even though I've done 2 white papers on clustering and 2 books on high availability, with my clients, I never lead with clustering because they're needs may dictate something else. So whether it's clustering, mirroring, log shipping, even replication, sometimes in many, you know, in the big iron cases where you've got, you know, a box that needs that 64 gig of memory and, you know, 16 procs, you're never going to want to virtualize that because you got the overhead of then virtualizing,
right?
Because that's the other thing that actually we didn't talk about is that a lot of the products now still limit how much you can scale your virtuals.
How many processes and how much memory?
Exactly. So if you really do have those big iron systems, they're never going to fit in current virtualization models.
I'm just wondering, what is the limit on, say, a Hyper-V virtualization for processes of memory?
I haven't played with Hyper-V that much, so I honestly don't know. But I would assume it's not, you know, 16 procs and 64 gig of memory. You know,
true.
And I've seen implementations out there that really do need stuff like that.
Well, and it does seem silly. As soon as you're talking at that scale, why would you virtualize? That sounds like anything that would need that kind of power. If you need 16 processors for a given database, you're not going to put anything else on that virtual machine. Why would you bother?
Well, I've found, you know, in all the years I've been in IT and working with SQL Server, if some customers can find a way to make it work, they'll do it. Even if it goes against any kind of common sense.
I've seen virtualization used in some scenarios where it was really a shock to see it used in some very huge volume application use, internet applications, but running on, you know, a virtualized platform and successfully. Now, in that particular case, the SQL Server was not running in a virtualized environment. That was the only piece that was on bare metal.
And that's actually pretty common. You know, people will virtualize the app servers and everything else in the environment. They just won't do the SQL servers. And that's a pretty common scenario right now. Although I think customers really want, or a lot of IT orgs want that to change.
Yep. Then again, in that dev and test environment, it can be really valuable to just be able to shut it down and bring it back up when you need it. I think one thing we've mentioned on the show before, you know, talking about the greening of the data center, is that virtualization is an opportunity in a data center environment to reduce the amount of, you know, heat build and power use that quite often restricts data centers from actually leveraging the total amount of space that's available in the building.
Oh, you know, and a big problem, I'm actually talking with a lot of customers who are running out of data center space. So
yeah.
That's partially fueling this as well, and that's also fueling a lot of the consolidation conversations that I have with folks as well. That they're out of space, they're not buying another data center. So how do we approach this problem? And again, virtualization is a very easy answer, but maybe not the right answer.
But it does, and it just increasing the densification of your data center creates new problems. Now you have heat problems, and you have power problems. How much power can you get to a given rack?
Yep. It's certainly going to, I'd say the space, especially in the SQL Server or the database, you know, whether it's Oracle or whatever else, the space for virtualization will, I think, in the Windows world, define itself in the next year or two, only because I think there's so much critical thinking or desire from people to do it that it's going to have to define itself. There's going to be no choice.
I just looked up some notes here, and it looks like Hyper-V limits the number of virtual processors to a given virtual machine to 4, but up to 64 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, so in that case, your bottleneck will be your processor.
Right. Well, and it seems odd that you would allow that much RAM and that few processors, but still.
It does seem a bit of a mismatch.
If you had 64 gigabytes of RAM you wanted to put into a virtual machine, why wouldn't you be bare metal? There's not going to be much more memory in that machine.
Exactly.
Well, especially if you're running a SQL Server on that machine.
Absolutely. So let's flip this around a little bit. We talked about the machine you'd always be bare metal. What's the one that's always virtual? Is it the 657 machines?
Yeah, to me, that's the one I always throw in a virtual because, let's face it, it's probably either on NT351 or NT4. You're not sure how to even deal with that sucker on a physical. You know, you're scared that it's going to go down.
Yeah, it's a piece of hardware you're afraid of on an application you probably have no real information about.
Yeah, and you have no chance of migrating to any later version of SQL Server.
No, it's lost.
Yeah, so absolutely take that box and, you know, shove it in virtual and forget about it.
Yeah, and never have to worry. It just shuffles from machine to machine, and you never ever remember to turn it off, really. One day people will stop using it.
Exactly. That, again, that's the only case I can see where almost 100% of the time I would do it.
Virtualization is a better answer.
Yeah.
It's an interesting scenario. So we talked at the top of this show, we were talking about in the next couple of years, this is going to become a huge issue. But is there any, and it's not really a technological issue, is there really a technological advancement we're waiting for that's just going to make virtualization prevalent for everything? You would never run any other way?
I don't think we'll ever get away from completely eliminating physical servers. Because, you know, if you think about virtualization another way, it's a putting all your eggs in one basket scenario.
Right.
You know, you've got N number of virtuals under one virtualized OS or whatever you want to call it, right? So how much of that happens before somebody has a really bad outage? You know, and unfortunately, I hear horror stories all the time from SANs where, you know, like the storage guys thought they would just update the firmware or BIOS. You've got 70 servers attached to it. The update goes south, you take out 70 servers.
Yeah, boom. But it doesn't just mean...
How soon before that happens in some mission-critical environment with a Hyper-V or ESX until somebody says, oh, no more virtualization for us, we're going all physical again.
And that's going to happen one of these days.
Exactly. And you know, so it's just like everything else. Like the people who had bad experiences with multi-instance pulled it out, and now they only have one instance per box, right?
Right.
It's going to happen to somebody somewhere.
Sooner or later. And it's funny how severe we get as IT folks, where we banish technologies because of our bad experience, even though obviously there are thousands of folks out there that have been completely successful with it.
And it's part of that bipolar IT personality. You know, it's either all good or all bad, and it couldn't possibly have been me that screwed it up, right?
Yeah, it's really no
matter. Worry, I want to be on the bleeding edge, but once I really fail on the bleeding edge, I want to go ultra safe.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, the risk of being on the bleeding edge is bleeding out, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Never a good thing.
But that's what makes what we do fun, right?
Oh, if it was easy, everybody'd be doing it.
Exactly.
So, really, the key argument coming in today is that IT is pushing down on the DBA saying, why can't we virtualize the production environment? And
right.
And your point here really comes down to that you need to have a fairly comprehensive set of controls over what the virtualized production environment looks like. And there are definite limits as to how big a system you can have that should be virtualized.
Yeah, and the other thing I would advise any DBAs or even just folks looking to virtualization, even if it's not SQL Server, is if you're getting pressure, or even if you aren't getting pressure, it's something you want to do. Start actively monitoring your systems, because I find most people aren't taking historical information and really analyzing it to understand what performance you're getting now, so that when you try and map it into a virtual, you'll see if you'll have enough bandwidth. Because that's the thing with any kind of migration, even going to new hardware. People don't take this information. So when you have to go buy new hardware, you kind of look at each other going, well, we never monitored this.
Yeah, we don't know what we need.
Right, exactly. I mean, if you've got the servers in-house, it's not that hard to spin up. Even if you don't have a centralized monitoring tool, go run some perfmon sessions.
Sure.
Dump some stuff out to some files. Bring it into Excel. Analyze it.
All right, Alan, I think we're coming to about the end of the show. Where are we going to see you next? TechEd?
I will be at TechEd speaking on clustering SQL with Windows Server 2008. In the second week, it's the IT week in June.
Great. We'll be there too.
Awesome.
Which is right about now, about the time this show hits the air.
Pretty close. All right, Alan, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.